Welcome back to Rome Boys. I'm roaming away from home. We're at the Hyatt Regency in San Antonio, Texas at the Fullness of Truth Conference, and I'm with Steve Ray. Steve, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Guys like you make me look short. It's been a great time. It's good to see you because I've been on your show a couple times over Zoom.
Right.
And it's nice to see the farmer face to face.
Yeah, Tony and Chris are out today. They're a little under the weather, so they couldn't make the conference. Yeah. And we've been to this conference a couple of times in the past. Is this your first time for Fullness of Truth?
Or? Oh, no. This is my third already this year.
But the first in San Antonio.
No, I've done San Antonio before, too, but it was a while ago, maybe 8 years or more ago.
Okay.
And I've been doing talks for them since they started. I was one of their first speakers, I think.
Okay. Yeah, my wife and I started attending these, pre-COVID, at least 2 or 3 years.
Oh, yeah, me too. Pre-COVID, probably 1998 or 99 I started them.
Okay, well, what's your favorite part about these conferences?
I love to learn and I love to teach. So my wife said, if I don't get an opportunity to teach and do what I did just an hour ago, I'd explode.
Right.
So I like builds up and all of a sudden, she just explodes. You know,
somebody's got to hear this.
Yeah. So yeah. I love that part of it. I love being able to see 1,000 people enthusiastic about the faith, laughing, learning, enjoying themselves, and going home knowing they're better Christians from it. I also love the people that come here, the great folks. And I get to meet guys like you.
Oh, well, I'm humbled. Now, you just got through giving a talk on Joseph, the manly man, basically his everyday life.
Right.
And going through that, was there anything that you'd like to touch on that you didn't say in the talk? And if you didn't catch his talk, I know they sell it. They're going to be selling
it. I have it on my website, too. It's called Joseph, the Manly Man and the Chosen Father. It's on my website, CatholicConvert.com.
Okay.
Advertisement over.
There you go.
my purpose today is during this year of St. Joseph, everybody's going to hear a lot about St. Joseph being holy and sinless and all of the spiritual aspect, how he prays and how he walks 3 feet off the ground. And I wanted to do, having been to the Holy Land over 180 times, and raised on a farm, I like to show the real Joseph. Which I don't think anybody's doing this year.
Well, yeah, you see the art. He's always clean cut.
Yep.
Got a nice shave.
Got all his teeth,
yes. So they didn't have a very good dental plan back then.
There's no reason to believe Joseph had all his teeth.
Really?
Because the pictures you see influence us, and we think, oh, he was so holy, he couldn't have lost his teeth. But I don't know what that has to do with it. If you're really holy, does that mean mosquitoes don't bite you?
Right.
Does that mean you never get a cold?
Right. Well, in your talk just an hour ago, you mentioned how every morning the first thing they didn't do was get up and pray.
That's what I love to ask. I always ask the audience, what do you think the Holy Family did the first thing in the morning when they got up?
Right.
And everybody says, pray.
That's not what they did. That's not what I do when I get up in the morning.
And then I ask that exactly. Is that what's the first thing you do every morning? And then everybody looks sheepish, get a little blush, and say, we go to the toilet. And why didn't you think that the Holy Family had bodily functions like you do?
Right.
And they did. They didn't walk 3 feet off the ground. They walked in the mud and the manure just like everybody else did. They may or may not have had all their teeth, and they certainly weren't pearly whites all perfectly in a row.
Right,
and straight, because there were no dentists. There were no oral surgeons back then. And if you bit something wrong, it cracked a tooth, it'd get infected, and you pulled it out. That was the only solution. I go out now to the deserts and visit the Bedouins out south and east of Bethlehem, where they still live in their caves and tents with their animals. And very rarely do I find one who has
most of
his teeth.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, aside from plumbing, no indoor plumbing. Didn't have most of their teeth. I'm sure they didn't have deodorant. So.
But you can't talk about the Blessed Virgin Mary like that.
No.
And I say, yes, you can, because I've walked in their footprints there, and I know what it's like to live rustic, and I know a good idea of what their life was like, not only because of imagination, but you can go back and read about life in those days, and you can read what it was like and what Nazareth was like.
Right. It wasn't this streets of paved, a pavement of asphalt and concrete.
When the book of Revelation comes out and talks about the streets of gold, that means a lot more to those people than it does even to us today.
Right. Oh, good call. I mean, you don't put it in our frame of mind. It's like, yep. Oh, streets. Yeah, we don't know what streets yep. are. They're used to walking in dirt and among other things. Yep. I'm sure they stepped in a lot of other stuff.
When we take our groups to pilgrimages, we stop at the last day and we got these camels and we get everybody rides on camels. So they get a feel for riding camels. It's always a fun photo op. But sure. While the camels are doing this, they're lifting up their tails and making plop, plop, making big mess. And the people are going, oh, that stinks. Oh, that's horrible. And stepping back and not thinking that when Mary went from Nazareth to Bethlehem to give birth to the baby, she was in a caravan right. full of camels and children and other animals, donkeys, and that's what they walked through.
Right.
So
right.
I always Jesus. Say that Mary and Jesus and Joseph, most people don't realize, but I would say a good part of the time they had camel dung between their toes, flies yeah. buzzing around their head. And why do you think over 23 times in the Bible it talks about washing feet?
Exactly, because their feet were pretty dirty.
They were.
Dirt roads.
And, it wasn't take your shoes off at the door. It was come in and wash those
and
feet.
Wash your feet, yeah. So it was the dirtiest part of your body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just walk, just where they walk.
So this
That's
is
amazing.
Good talking about to a farmer about these things because
right.
you understand.
Right, yeah, because this is something that we daily do as farming. Yeah.
And
in
I was
the
raised
world.
On a farm, so I'm
yeah, we're naturally getting dirty. You're walking in the mud. You're putting your hands where most people would probably be like, I ain't touching that.
Yeah,
so
exactly right.
Absolutely.
I watch my wife and I love the James Herriot stories about farm life of the vets in England.
Oh, okay.
50, it was during World War II before. And he's a vet, and we love these shows. They're called All Creatures Great and Small. And it shows many times he's reaching right up in the cow to help pull the baby cow
right.
out, you know.
Yep.
And
done that a few times.
These people that lived back in these days, they were much more rustic and lived much differently than we do today.
They,
people are
absolutely.
Squeamish about killing anything today. And my son put up a story on my website about how he killed a lamb. Some family of his, they needed to kill a lamb, and they're going to eat him. And my son went over and shot the lamb, and he talked about how it kicked and wiggled, and he mm-hmm. had to skin the lamb. And he said it was, and he said he realized that was just like Passover. And you would not believe how many people criticized that comment that was so inhumane, and to kill an animal like that. When
right.
they don't realize that at Passover, there were times where in Jerusalem there were as many as 250,000 lambs slaughtered for the Passover.
Wow.
The blood ran down into the Kidron Valley.
Sure. Golly. Can you,
why
you
would
can't
God
imagine
sanction
that?
Such a thing?
Right. I don't know. Isn't that such? That's so anti-PETA would get on to God right now.
People eating tasty animals.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If he didn't want us to eat them, why did he make them so delicious?
That's exactly right. But my our point, you and me here, we're doing a little fun and joking
sure.
and jesting. But Christians today in America have, I think, such a sanitized, unrealistic view of the early Christians and Christianity.
I agree.
I'll give you another example. In Exodus 24:8, it's what the Eucharist is built on. Jesus said, this is the blood of the new covenant. This is my blood of the new covenant. He's using the exact words from Exodus 24:8 that says, they killed the bull, and they sprinkled the blood, and they poured it into bowls.
Right.
And then
right.
they sprinkled it on people.
Yeah.
And it says, this is the blood of the covenant. Just think of that. Who killed the bull? How did you get the bull there? How did you get the blood out of him?
Right.
What did the blood smell like when it's 90 degrees and you're splattering everybody in the audience
yeah.
with the blood? What are you going to do with a dead bull laying there? Just think if it was in a church, somebody drags the bull up to the front and slaughters him in front. Nobody would want to sit next to the aisles because you know that bull's going to be kicking and screaming up the way up and he's going to be blood and manure. This is the Old Testament.
Right.
And the New Testament is based on it. Even the wording, this is the blood. This is my blood of the New Covenant. And you're supposed to think of that bull being slaughtered in
right.
blood.
I don't know why it just came to mind, but you remember the old comedian Gallagher?
Yeah.
Where he would roll the watermelons on the stage. And he would have this big old giant mallet and he would smash it. And everybody in the front row would be wearing like plastic and from getting sprayed.
Splattered with
watermelon. Pieces and stuff like that. Can you imagine being in the front row of the church when the bull is being slaughtered?
Yep.
Yeah, you're going to get splattered.
That's
and
right.
It's not going to taste or smell good like watermelon.
The whole point is that Christianity is not some sanitized, liberal 20th century acceptable, nice, polite religion. It's Christianity is based on Judaism. It's very earthy, very real. To the point that even Paul, when the Judaizers were telling everybody they had to be circumcised before they could become Christians. Because the word Christian, Christ, is the word Messiah in Greek.
Right.
Messiah and Christ are the same word. The Messiah.
Okay.
So
if
you are a Christian, you are a follower of the Jewish Messiah. That's what that word means.
Right.
So the Jews came along, the early believers, and said, wait, you can't Gentiles uncircumcised. You can't be.
Right. You can't be a Jew.
If you
want
to be a Christian, you have to become one of us first. So you got to go over there with a flint knife. And that's what they used, and circumcised.
Right.
Then you can be a Christian and follow our Jewish Messiah.
Right.
Paul was so angry at them. If you read it in the English Bible, it says, and Paul says, about those Judaizers, he was so angry, he said, I wish they would just mutilate themselves. But in the Greek, it's, I wish they would just slip with a knife and cut the whole thing off. I wish you would just castrate themselves. That's what Paul says.
He's a little harsh.
Yeah,
a little angry there.
You stupid Galatians. Who has bewitched you? Why wish they would just castrate themselves? So this is the Bible, but we sanitize it even by changing the wording in the Bible so that you don't know what the word really means.
Well, it's interesting that now that you've been explaining that, it's like we've been desensitized to the rusticness of the Bible.
Yep.
Which is strange because in the culture we've been desensitized to violence in all the movies and the video games and all that stuff, and that just seems normal.
Exactly.
That's all normal to mutilate and murder people on TV and video games, but in the Bible, that's where it's all nice and clean
and you ignore those things and you read it with rose-colored glasses, I think.
Right, exactly. Wow. Well, I appreciate your time that you've been
to
spend with me.
Very edifying, earthy. Disgusting topics, but we're farmers anyway.
We're farmers. We're used to playing in the dirt, playing in the mud and the feces and all that other stuff.
I like to kind of force people out of their comfort zone a little bit. That's why I like taking pilgrimages, because it takes people away from their house and their friends and their job, get them out of their comfort zone into a new environment where they're not comfortable, where they're kind of looking around and they have to see things in a different light.
Right.
And when we talk about the Bible and Christianity like we do today, like we have, it's good because it forces people out of their comfort zone and it causes them to see things in a different light. And I think it gives us a more holistic picture of the whole Catholic faith and God and everything else.
Absolutely. And your pilgrimages, y'all are cranking them back up, right?
We're cranking them back up in 2 weeks. I don't know when this will air, but...
Sure.
First week of September, we leave for Portugal. I've got 30 people, and we're heading to Lourdes and Fatima and all the places in between through Portugal, Spain, and France. And it looks like that's going to fly.
Oh, good.
That'll be my first time. I was one of the last pilgrimages that left Israel before they closed the door. I think after our group left, they closed down the airport.
Wow.
Or very quick after. And I think we're going to be – groups are going to Israel yet.
Okay. Are there going to be any requirements that are going to like hinder you from? I mean, I know what
it's going to be tedious.
And
to go to Israel, you have to have either the Pfizer or the Moderna.
Okay.
Both shots. You have to be able to prove that, and they're going to test you through the nose and blood tests.
Oh wow!
Periodically through the trip to go to
periodically
other places,
just at random, probably.
And then check everybody on the bus or at the hotel. And at Lourdes and Fatima, you have to have a vaccine to go into France, and I think it's Spain. And they're going to also do periodic testing, and they expect us to wear masks everywhere. And I'm not a masker.
Right.
I've refused to wear masks because I know that the masks do not do what people tell us they do.
Sure.
I've already had COVID and the vaccine now. And I'm not a threat to anybody.
Okay.
And I just am opposed to the whole forced compliance.
I'm about to say that mandate word is kind of a bad word right now.
It is. But I got the vaccine, even though I was totally opposed to it. I would not have gotten it in a million years if it wasn't forced upon me to take groups to these countries, which is what God called me to do. I'm doing what God wants me to do, and my wife and I prayed and talked to other folks about it, and we decided it was a prudential judgment that we had to do in order to fulfill what God has asked us to do, taking people to these lands, which we couldn't do otherwise. Now imagine, I've got 52 people registered to go to Israel in September, and if I don't show up because they won't let me in, that's not going to be good.
That's not going to be good. You're right. So, no, that's an interesting perspective. I haven't even heard that point of view of thinking, this is what God's called me to do. And for me to accomplish his will, this is something that I would not normally do, but for this calling, I have to do it.
Yep, that's exactly what we did.
Well, that's a very prayerful and decision that you had to make.
And we asked the Lord to protect us from any negative effects of it.
Right, yeah, because I'm sure we're just learning what all is going to come from that. That for me, it was always, they made it a little too quick, and what's in that cocktail? But
it sure is. That's all right. And there's too many anecdotal horror stories, too.
That's true. So you've got a few pilgrimages already lined up, already.
Next year, especially.
God willing, unless they shut things down again, which I don't.
Five trips to Israel next year. November and December to Israel this year. We're also doing some domestic trips. We're taking a group to St. Augustine, Florida in November.
Okay.
Because that's where everything started, actually, in our country. It didn't start with the Protestant pilgrims at Mayflower. It started, actually, in St. Augustine 55 years early and Catholic. So we go down and study that history and show all that to people, and it's really a fascinating trip. We're also doing the Shrines of Wisconsin once a year now. We just got back from that. We had 100 people on that trip, and we had a day with Cardinal Burke right before he got COVID, and we had a wonderful time on that trip. We're also going to include the Shrines of Michigan, where I live, which is the largest crucifix in the world and I think the first church built, which actually my great-great-great-grandfather carved the altar railing in.
Wow.
And the biggest crucifix in the world is in Michigan. And then we're going to add eventually Philadelphia, too, which has a lot of churches and shrines and saints. And we're also going to make that a patriotic theme.
Wow.
Saints and Patriots of Philadelphia.
There you go, the Saints and Patriots. I like that. Yep. Now, y'all have also done some to Mexico City. Is that right?
We've done it to Mexico City. And we call it our Western Hemisphere, the heritage of Catholicism.
We were blessed to be able to go to the Basilica and see the Tilma make our kind of own little family pilgrimage down there, and it was great. It really
we do
was.
That one periodically, too, and that's a great place, isn't it?
It is. Very it's beautiful. Yeah. That's very impressive. Now, I'm going to go back a little bit. You said that your great-great-great-great-grandfather carved the railing?
It's got to be my great-great-great-grandfather and his father. It's an oak altar railing, very beautifully carved, and that has remained in the family tradition all along that he did that. His name was Louis Leander Picard. They came from France, went up through Quebec.
Now, were they Catholic?
They were Catholic, very Catholic.
Okay, so you're a convert, though, so it was...
I didn't know. What happened was their family came from France, very Catholic, stayed in Quebec for a while, came down the Detroit River, built in downtown Detroit back in the old days. We're very involved in that church, and we can see their baptismal First Communion records still. I have copies of those now from 1700s, and they also were there during the Civil War. Then my grandfather broke the line because he wanted to get divorced, and the church wouldn't let him, so he said, then I'm leaving the church, and he left the church. And so my mom was raised with no religion.
Okay.
She got converted in 1953 at a Billy Graham convention. So I didn't know we had Catholic heritage until I started doing my homework and found out I had a couple Catholic lines that went back.
A few branches. Well, actually, it was more of the trunk, I guess. The trunk was Catholic and branched off and kind of got mixed in with the other couple trees. I know how that works. Yep.
Yep.
Well, this is great. Are you doing any other conferences coming up for Fullness of Truth or for any other?
This is my third Fullness of Truth conference. I'm going there in September, I think it is, for their big gala dinner.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's I'll be there. Down in Houston.
Yep, I'll be there in Houston for that. And I have a good bit of conferences and men's conferences and parish missions coming up throughout the rest of the year. I'm in the air a lot right now. Really? I'm in the air a lot.
Well, it's good that we're back in the air.
Back in the air again.
Back in the air again. So, man, this has been great. I appreciate the time
thank
that you spent
Joe.
With me,
good
Steve.
Talking with you.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to kind of just shake your hand instead of seeing you over a Zoom.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I remember when we've had the pleasure of interviewing lots of, you know, good names. We just got through with an interview with Scott Hahn, Dr. Hahn, and all through Zoom. And it wasn't until, I guess, over the summertime we interviewed Father Mitch Pacwa. And he was actually in Texas, and we went and saw him.
Ah, nice.
And to be able to meet on Zoom is cool, you know, to be able to visit with you. But to be able to actually shake your hand and visit with you and be this, you know, right here, it's been a lot. It's a lot cooler.
Yeah, I agree. I agree very much.
I wish the other guys could have been here.
I wish so, too. Tell them I said hello.
I will do.
We missed them.
Yeah, we will. Well, Steve, again, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
And taking the time out to... Right here in the middle of the bookstore. I mean, we got all these people walking around us, kind of staring at us, going, what in the world are these guys doing?
Yeah. This is probably the biggest Catholic bookstore that traveling, whenever there's conferences, Fullness of Faith, they have a whole auditorium just full of books.
I was wandering around yesterday with my GoPro taking videos of it, and I said, my wife is not allowed to come here because I don't know if we can afford it. But she's here, so I don't see too much in her hand at the moment.
I bet you she's out walking around because she knows you're busy.
Yeah. I have the credit card in my wallet, in my pocket. Well, Steve, again, thanks again.
Thank you, Joe. God bless you.
God bless. In the meantime, be real, be bold, be Catholic. God bless.